Blog Talk Radio.
Spend some time in the country, we're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
You found the place for up-close and personal interviews with your favorite country stars. This is In the Country, hosted by Dave Wood. Stay tuned for great stories and great music. Now live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to the show.
New Brunswick country artist Chris Cummings has just released album number 6, entitled Give Me Tonight, which features the current radio single, Leaving's Not an Option. It's another great song to add to his list of hits, which includes I've Waited, Sure Enough, The Kind of Heart That Breaks, and No One Hurts Me More Than Me, to name just a few. He's written songs with some of Nashville's top writers, including Don Schlitz, who wrote The Gambler, Forever and Ever Amen, When You Say Nothing at All, several big hits. Together, Don and Chris wrote 20th Century for Alabama, which received a Grammy nomination. He's here to talk about his music career, his brand new CD, songwriting, and much more. My pleasure to welcome to In the Country, Chris Cummings. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, Dave?
Hey, it is going great. Nice to have you on the line tonight from New Brunswick.
Yeah, I'm back here, doing the Christmas shopping thing like everybody else. That's what we've been up to the last few days.
Now, would it be fair for you to give anyone on your list your CD for Christmas?
I hope so. I hope a few people will put it on their list for Christmas. Yeah, it'd probably be an extra gift. It would be kind of cheesy to give that as the only gift, but it would be something to throw in. Yeah,
definitely. And the new CD is Give Me Tonight. And there's great songs in here, a real mixture of songs. You've got, of course, the new single, Leaving's Not an Option, which we're also going to play on the show today. And you've got Welcome Back, which, of course, the John Sebastian song, which was the theme for Welcome Back, Cotter. That's kind of on there as a little interesting bonus almost.
Yeah, we did that actually in 2008 as a project with the city of St. John, New Brunswick. They were looking for it was kind of a repatriation effort to attract some young workers back to the province. And they approached us about doing a video for the city to use at certain functions and things like that. So, I suggested that song as a good theme song for the theme that they were looking at. And a lot of cool things kind of came out of that, actually. After we did the video, I was contacted by the creator of Welcome Back, Cotter, a guy named Alan Sachs. And he had heard that we had done the song and were doing a remake, and found it interesting. So we actually ended up meeting up with him in Toronto in 2009, and he wanted to talk about collaborating on a series pitch for U.S. Networks about kind of an updated version of Welcome Back, Cotter, about a musician who had moved back to his hometown and working with young kids, in the music field. And so, we kind of wrote up a little script and sent it through, and haven't heard anything back at this point, but it was cool even to get to that stage of it.
Now, that's pretty neat. So you're working on the script. Was there talk about you being in the TV series? Like, were you the physician?
Yeah, there was talk of it. He was talking about it being called Welcome Back, Cummings. And, I have no acting experience whatsoever, so I don't know if that part of it would ever come to pass. But it'd be cool even if he did a series, if he uses our version of the song or whatever. So it was just, totally out of the blue. He contacted us on MySpace, of all things, and we ended up meeting with him. And he actually had me, he also manages the Jonas Brothers. And he had me audition for Camp Rock 2 as well, which was a movie that they were doing at the time. And apparently I was about 10 or 15 years too young for the part that I tried out for. But it was just a weird week. Very strange week.
Going from the music world to TV and movie world. Pretty cool. It's amazing. I guess you never know what a song that you write is going to do for you.
You have no idea, and that's the thing. You know, the little songs that you have the idea for in the shower end up bringing all of these opportunities. And
yeah.
We had another thing like that with Betty, which was a hit of mine a few years back on the Greatest Hits package.
Yep.
And Archie Comics is actually making a movie, Betty and Veronica, I believe, or something like that, in the next couple of years, and the song's in contention for being in the movie. So, yeah, you just never know. I mean, there's a lot of...
That is really cool. That's one of my favorite songs of yours, too, because I was a big Archie fan growing up, along with other comics, but Archie I really liked in Betty and Veronica.
Yeah, it's so innocent.
Jughead.
So, you know, yeah. Classic, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what's amazing when you wrote that song is just you got all the references in there. I mean, you fit everything in from the jalopy, just everything in there, really. And yet it's a modern song. It's really cool.
I tried. You know, I always describe it as probably my favorite single of my career because it was a positive love song that didn't have any cliches. You know, it was based
right.
on something that nobody had touched on in music, so I was happy with it.
Now, another song you've got on here is, it's an earlier song, Lucy Got Lucky, which was a big hit and also had a great video to go with it. And on the current CD, you've got an acoustic version of it, pretty stripped-down version. What was the thinking behind including that in that form?
The thinking behind that was that that and another single of mine, Not Again, were the only two hits of mine that were currently unavailable for sale. My contract with Warner ended back in 2005, and for whatever reason, they kept the rest of my catalog up digitally for sale on iTunes and stuff like that, but Lucy Got Lucky was never available for sale. So once the album stopped printing in 2008, there was no place to buy it.
Right.
I still get requests for it a lot, and we still, of course, do it in the live show all the time. So it just made sense, kind of strengthen the album too for people who were, you know, getting into, you know, just buying their first record of mine to kind of have a song that they already knew from a few years past on there.
And it's always interesting to hear an artist sing some of the hits we know when they're fully produced, but to hear them sing it with just the guitar and maybe one other instrument, just really acoustically, do you enjoy delivering songs like that, right down to the bare bone?
Yeah. In fact, over the last couple of years, I've been doing kind of half full band shows, and for smaller markets, we've been doing a three-piece show. You know, they get to hear all of the songs that we've done that way. And I've always been comfortable with the acoustic thing. I started out in Nashville as kind of doing the writer's nights and stuff like that when I was younger. And, I just, you know, I've always been comfortable with two or three pieces being just as presentable. Sometimes you want the full band. I mean, you know, songs like Dixie Bodorant and stuff like that don't translate as well to the acoustic set, But I've been comfortable both ways.
Yeah, the ballads definitely lend themselves to the acoustic and can bring out another angle on it, I guess, another sentiment. Now, when you're talking about the acting experience in that and whatever, now you've done a lot of videos. How comfortable are you with being in a video? They always end up looking good. Are they a lot of work? Are they tough to do?
It depends on the video. You know, the first few videos we did were not that tough. They were one-day shoots, and, you know, it's a long day. It's a 14 or 16-hour day. But the last few videos we've done have kind of been epic productions. Dixie Bodorant took 4 days to do, and Welcome Back, which we were just speaking of, was another four-day production. So it just, you know, kind of comes and goes as far as what the director has in mind, and I've been really happy with the way a couple of the one-day videos have turned out, and I've been happy with the four-day video, too, but they are a lot more work once you start to do more than a couple of locations.
Right. And even though, you know, in some cases you might be playing a form of yourself in those videos, I think it's really hard just to act natural in front of a camera.
It is. You know, it's hard to act natural in front of the camera, and I always found music video probably one of the hardest forms of it because they're asking you to act without any lines, without any dialogue.
True.
And that can be even harder. You're basically doing the Marcel Marceau and miming everything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, it's been good experience. I've done 9 of them, I think, now, or 10. And if anything, if I ever do have to do anything with the Welcome Back series or anything like that, I would count that as my only real experience going into it.
There you go. Yeah, at least you've got some of that
jungle
blocking.
Yeah.
And
I've probably
got
like 30 days on set. You know, that's basically my experience.
Yeah, exactly. You can probably stretch it out and make it sound a little more more big than that, you know.
We can embellish, yeah, for sure.
Embellish, exactly. Now, another song on the current CD, again, the CD is called Give Me Tonight, and it's available on iTunes. There's also some links at chriscummings.ca people can hook up at. But one of the songs is called For the Music.
At chriscummings.ca, I wanted to mention that we're, for the first time, we're doing autographed copies. We'll personally autograph the CD to anybody they want. All they have to do is send a note through with their PayPal account or whatever. And so we're trying to do that as much as we can anyway and see how the response is. For the music you mentioned, that was a single in 2007. And we brought that song along because, again, it was going to be out of print from the Koch recording that we had done in 2006. And it was probably my biggest hit of the last 3 years. I think we got to 17 on the chart or something like that with that one. And it's just a little song about coming home. You know, it was kind of autobiographical when I moved back to Canada and talked about, you know, leaving at 15 and stuff like that. So it was kind of a personal song, and it's one we still get a lot of requests for at shows.
And I guess the message, one of the big messages is in it, is that after all this time, you still love doing it for the music, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it really is, and that's kind of how I felt when I wrote it. And you know, since then, it's been good to be back home. I mean, it's a lot more relaxing setting. Nashville is great for a lot of reasons. You know, there's the songwriting community, and there's a lot of things going on. But I just, growing up in a town of 1,500, I was never comfortable living in a city of a million people. And, it was just a big change. I moved from Norton, New Brunswick to Los Angeles and then to Nashville. So, 1,500 to 15 million in L.A., so it was totally different. And, I always knew, I didn't always know, but after about 2 or 3 years in Nashville, I knew that it wasn't going to be home for any really extended period of time. It ended up being about 11 years that I was there, but for the last 4 or 5 years I was there, I was planning on moving back to Canada. And kind of had Ontario in my sights as where I was planning on moving, because I thought it would be central to tour from. But as technology advanced, I figured I could do most things that I needed to do from the Maritimes, and it's good to be close to family again.
Nice. Well, let's turn to the music, Chris, and then when we come back, we've got lots more to talk about, including the Alabama song, writing with Don Schlitz, who's written, you know, legendary songs, and much, much more we're going to get to. But the song we're going to play first is Lucy Got Lucky. This is the full version, I believe, not the acoustic one that's on the new album.
Right. This is the hit version that was out in 2004. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you share with us a bit about the writing behind it? It's a really cool song.
I wanted to write a high school romance song for the unpopular. That was the total idea behind it, because that's what I was in high school. I didn't, you know, wasn't in the sports clique, and being a country music singer in high school didn't make you very popular in New Brunswick in the early 90s. that was kind of the idea behind it, and I got to throw some references in there, like the Breakfast Club reference, which is one of my favorite movies, and the entire video was based around John Hughes movies. We managed to snick Ferris Bueller in there, and also some of the other 80s teen movies like Say Anything, but basically Breakfast Club was the center part of it.
Yeah, great video. And let's share the song now. This is Lucy Got Lucky from Chris Cummings on In the Country.
Don't you worry.
Artist Chris Cummings and one of his big hits, Lucy Got Lucky. You can hear an acoustic version of that on his new CD called Give Me Tonight. It's available on iTunes. You can head there and punch in Chris Cummings. You can also head to chriscummings.ca. And by the way, Chris, great new job on the website at Newly Designed.
Just up for the last 3 weeks. Yeah, maybe 2 weeks. I'm not even sure. But yeah, it's a fellow out of Nova Scotia named Matt Dunlop did the site for us. He works for several artists back here, Joel Plaskett being one of my favorites that he does this stuff for.
Right.
So, it's exciting. I've never had really a website to this extent. We had kind of a couple of pseudo ones over the years, but this is the first time I'm really involved with it, and going to be doing some video blogs on there, and just trying to keep people informed. I think we're not going to do too many dates through the winter, but once we have some dates up in the spring, they'll be on there and have ticket prices and all that kind of stuff, so people can find out what's going on.
Oh, excellent. Okay, great. People can keep up to date with you there, chriscummings.ca. Now, I was talking about Don Schlitz, and of course, Kenny Rogers, The Gambler, was a song that he wrote. Also, Forever and Ever Amen, Randy Travis, Keith Whitley, and Alison Krauss recorded When You Say Nothing at All. I mean, right there, there's three legendary songs. Now, you're writing Don.
Yeah, I've written with Don on and off over the last 7-8 years. It's been a couple of years now since we've written one, because I haven't been to Nashville. But we wrote 40 songs, I think, or 39 or something like that. So he was one of my idols. He was one of the reasons I started writing. And to get a chance to work with a guy like that was just incredible. And there's three songs on the new album that I wrote with Don, actually. There's two others, one called The Favorites, and one called Looking for a Sign. So, we dug back into the catalog, and I'm going to be pitching a lot of the songs that I wrote with him, too. I haven't pitched other artists over the last few years, really, and that's something I plan on getting a lot more involved with in the new year.
Do you have, and I'm sure you do you have certain songs that you have artists in mind that the songs, in your opinion, would be perfect for?
Definitely. We definitely have more traditional songs that would go to the more country artists, and then you look at stuff that might be a little bit pop rock influenced to go to some of the bands and some of the artists that are doing that. I don't have as many female songs as I would like. I don't have as many songs that I feel like I can pitch to female artists, but
going to be
working on that. Well, we were writing everything for, trying to write for my records when we were writing those catalogs. And there's a lot of references that, sometimes you can just change she to he or he to she and the song works out, and other times it doesn't feel like it will. So I'm going to be concentrating this winter on writing 5 or 10 songs kind of pointed towards female artists.
Now, can you name a couple of specific artists that for you would be sort of like a dream come true or just a big
goal?
Yeah.
I got a chance to hand a tape. I met up with Randy Travis about 8 weeks ago. And
wow.
I was at a concert backstage, and they said it would be okay if I brought some songs for him. So I brought him a tape of 6 songs. And even though you wouldn't make the money that you would have off of Randy 10 years ago, it would just be so cool. He was one of the artists that really influenced me. And if he ended up cutting one of the songs, that would be a great one. Alison Krauss is another one. I just think she's wonderful. And I'm mainly going to be pitching to artists in Canada over the next while. It's really difficult to get your songs to the top of the pile. It's so political in Nashville getting it to some of the biggest artists. But in Canada, it's still cool because you can call the artist up yourself and just kind of say, hey, you know, I've got some songs for you. Can I get them to you? And you just don't have that accessibility for your Keith Urbans or your Brad Paisleys or anything like that. It's
right.
A little more of a process.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's great that you'll be pitching to Canadian artists because, of course, there's so many talented ones here in Canada, and I'm sure they'd be happy to record a Chris Cummings song. And so that'll be something to look forward to.
CanCon doesn't hurt either. Making
exactly.
sure that their CanCon doesn't hurt. So
exactly.
That'll help out. And in fact, for the first time since I've been writing a lot of songs on my own, I'm thinking about offering, a small portion of the publishing or something to the artists, which is a kind of a new idea, I think, that hasn't been done in Canada, so at least they'd have a way to make money off a song they didn't write. I know how hard it is to put a song out there that you didn't write and you don't really have any interest in. So not interest as in physical.
Yeah, that kind of interest, but financial interest.
Financial interest, yeah. And so I'm going to... just, you know, kind of throw some new ideas around and see how people respond to it over the next little bit.
Yeah, for those who don't know, and sometimes people who are so close to the music business, people outside of it think that, you know, you sell songs to an artist, but it's through royalties, through radio airplay, through video airplay, and anywhere the song is used. And the songwriter, who could be an unknown person in some, like Don Schlitz, he certainly isn't unknown, but maybe to the average country fan, they don't know him, and yet he makes a great living writing songs.
The names aren't known, and that money, you know, if I wasn't a writer, I don't know if I'd still be doing it. That's kind of what pays the bills when you're not touring. And in Canada, you know, people kind of, their perceptions of the Canadian music industry and Canadian celebrities, if you will, is kind of out of whack, you know, because everybody thinks that if you're on television and on the radio, you're a millionaire. And that's not the case for most artists. Most artists are out there, you know, if you're lucky as a writer, if you're going to make between $50,000 and $100,000 in a year, which is a great living, don't get me wrong, but people expect that you're making between $1 and $2 million, and that's not the case. Yeah.
Yeah, there's such a kind of smoke and mirrors or this
glamour. It really
is.
It really is. There's kind of that whole, you know, perception is everything, and television kind of warps that. People think, you know, the famous story I always go back to was the first time I heard something like that made me kind of poke my head up was a television show in the States called Singled Out, where a young actress, you probably know her, Jenny McCarthy, was working on. And, you know, she said in an interview a few years later what she was paid for that show, and I was just shocked. She was paid $350 a show. And people would have thought that she was making, you know, $50,000 a show or something like that.
Exactly.
There are the rich and famous in the music industry. Of course there are, but don't assume that everybody that you hear on the radio is rich, and therefore don't rip off their record if you can help
us. Yeah, we need to get people to download from iTunes and to pay for wherever they download it from, because the songwriter and the artist, you know, that's their money. That's their way of earning a living.
That's their way of earning a living, and boy, have sales been hurt over the last 10 years in Canada. It's a strange thing, and I hope that reverses at some point. I know that the government's kind of getting involved and doing a few things with it, but you know, you don't have to buy the whole album. If you only like a couple of songs from an artist, go spend $2, you know, and you'll get those couple of songs that you want. It's not, when I was a kid, I had to spend $15 to get the one song I wanted on an album.
Exactly,
so
I remember those days.
It's changed from there. All you have to do is, everybody's got a dollar if you want a song. You know, I mean, go spend 99 cents and feel good about it.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, one of the songs that you did get recorded by a big act, of course, Alabama. This was, I think, around 2000. The song 20th Century, that was on one of their albums, and you co-wrote that with Don Schlitz, and it was nominated for a Grammy. How cool is that?
It was very cool. Yeah, that was very cool, and that was one of those songs that I didn't know. You know, when we were done with it, I thought it was kind of a strange, odd little song, and I didn't think it would ever be recorded. And within 2 months, Don gave me a call and said, "Hey, we got the title track for the Alabama album." That was actually the name of the album. And, to have a Grammy nomination, it's just something you don't expect. I mean, there's so few of those that are handed out, and... I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm not sure how many Canadian country artists have ever had a song nominated for a Grammy. So it was one of those things that one of those highlights of the career, if you will, and it's really cool. Hopefully get another one. Who knows? You hope for things to go that far again, but it's rare.
Yeah, a long shot, but in that case you made it. And growing up, Alabama was one of my favorite groups, probably my favorite group, right up there with all the other great acts that I love. So that was really cool that you had that cut and that Grammy nomination.
It was a really cool one. And we got a cool one the year after that on a guy you probably grew up listening to, David Frizzell.
Loved him.
Cut one of my songs, which Cowboy Hats, and I thought that was a cool cut too. So I've had a few here and there that have turned out well, and without working it very much, I've had a few cuts over the years. So hopefully now that I'm going to be working it over the next couple of years, we'll get more.
Yeah. Now, what was it like working on the album, the one that's out now called Give Me Tonight, with Dave Kalmusky down in Toronto?
It was great, and Dave did 4 tracks on my last album, too. It was the first time I had worked with him, and when I was getting ready to do this record, I wasn't thinking of talking to anybody else, really. He's a good producer, and he manages to get some studio time and get us into some places that are really cool. We cut at Phase One, which they've had the Rolling Stones in there, U2, I think the person who was in the week before us was Drew Barrymore doing a soundtrack for something. And so he gets us into some rooms that we can't really afford after hours for the prices that we can afford. And it was a really cool experience. And the 3 acoustic tracks that we did, Dave still produced and played guitar and sang harmony on, but I ended up doing the vocals for them over here in New Brunswick, which is, again, something you couldn't do 10 years ago, really. So, it turned out it's a good little project. I feel really strong about it. You know, we've got something kind of for everybody. If you've been following my career for the entire time, there's 7 new tracks and a different version of Lucy that we talked about. And if you haven't been following it, it's kind of a bit of a compilation album where you get to pick up a couple of songs that were on the radio a few years ago and still get a bunch of new stuff, too.
Now, this is always a tough question, but can you pick a favorite? Is there one that, for one reason or another, is your favorite on the new album?
My favorite, I have two songs that would be considered the favorites. Would be one is called The Favorites,
right.
So that's one of them. I just feel like that's one of the sweetest and strangest little songs of my career, and I hope that people enjoy the story behind it when they hear the song. And then Leaving's Not an Option, which is the current single. And that one had fallen up by the wayside, really. I had recorded a demo on it in like 2003 or 4 and just completely forgot about it. And then when I went back and listened through the catalog, I thought, you know, that's a country song. And you don't hear that many true country songs on the charts anymore, so I've been proud to have that one come out. And I think this week we were at 24 or something like that on the media based charts, so
nice.
It's nice back in the top 25 is really nice. I don't know how much farther it'll go with the Christmas music coming in and kind of playing havoc with the charts over the next few weeks, but to get to 24 has been nice again. It's nice to be back inside the top 30, and that song being as traditional country as it is, I was proud to be able to push one up there.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have, on the subject of cover songs, do you have some favorite ones you like to do in concert, and do you have one that you're dying to record, a cover song?
There's a bunch of them, you know, that's the thing. There's so many that it's hard to choose one to actually record. In the show, we've done stuff like, I end up doing some rock songs as cover songs a lot of the time. We do 8675309 by Tommy Two Tone.
Yep.
been thinking about doing Jesse's Girl by Rex Springfield.
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
I love that song, too. And as far as the countryside goes, there's a song called You've Got a Lover. I don't know if you remember the Ricky Skaggs record back, I think it was 82 or 83 that he put that out. And that's a song that I just think is one of those excellent start-to-finish, well-placed songs. And if I was going to record something for radio, that might be the one that comes to the top. Another song is a Don Schlitz song called Gimme Wings, which was out on an artist called Michael Johnson.
Oh yeah,
beautiful
song.
In the late '80s, I love that song.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of them, but those two kind of come to the top as far as things you would actually record. I don't think I would ever record Jesse's Girl, obviously. I don't think the world needs a version of Jesse's Girl out there by me.
That's too funny. Well, yeah, it's such a great song, but Michael Johnson, you mentioned, of course, the song Gimme Wings. I was a big fan of his, and kind of one of those names that people might not remember because he was probably around for maybe 3 or 4 years, but he had some great songs, including Bluer Than Blue, which was a huge hit for him.
Bluer Than Blue and The Moon Is Still Over Her Shoulder was another one. And Gimme Wings is one of those songs that I can't believe somebody's already not recut. You know, it feels great, and it's got a great message. And I've always told Don, out of all of his hits, you know, that's probably my favorite song. That one and Learning to Live Again by Garth Brooks was another one he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
That, great song. And but Gimme Wings, I'd be surprised. And now I've probably blown it. Now that I've said that, there's going to be some artist listening to this podcast, and they'll get in the studio before I ever get a chance to do it. So.
We'll tell them right now, don't do that. That's not right. We're going to save that one for Chris.
We're copywriting the idea right now. I get a 10% cut if somebody beats me to it.
Exactly, a finder's fee or a creator's fee. Let's turn back to the album Give Me Tonight, and we're going to play the second of three songs we're sharing, and this one is called Heart Like a Stone. Now, can you tell us about the idea behind this one, Chris?
Heart Like a Stone I wrote this one by myself, and wrote it in, I think, 2006 or 7. And it was a ballad. It was a complete ballad, and I was going back through the catalog looking for songs and looking for another country song, and it was kind of a rock power ballad. And so I took it and revamped it and made it into a mid-tempo country song. And it was actually the first single off the record. And we had been gone for about 2.5 years from the market, and it didn't do as well as Leaving's Not an Option on the charts or anything like that. We got on the air in about 35 markets, where Leaving's Not an Option's on the air in about 80 markets. But it was a good reintroduction. You know, the markets that played it said it's good to have you back, and they played it a lot, the markets that did play it. And it kind of leaves it open. So since it wasn't such a big hit, there'll be a song that I can pitch to other artists in a couple of years. But I was really proud of this record. I think that it's a good mid-tempo song. I think it's an intelligent song, and we had Amanda Wilkinson singing background on this one.
Excellent.
That was kind of the little what am I trying to say, icing on the cake for the track,
right,
having Amanda on here. So we'll take a listen to it and see what everybody else thinks, but I think it's a real solid mid-tempo country song.
Awesome. Let's do that, and then we'll come back and talk about lots more. This is Chris Cummings and Heart Like a Stone on In the Country.
This comes down to regard. This still gives.
Brunswick country artist Chris Cummings and his song Hard Like a Stone. You'll find that on his new CD, Give Me Tonight. And Chris, you mentioned sort of changing that around and changing the tempo. Do you have other songs that you revisit and you find if you just tweak something here and there, maybe either a line or the tempo that you can bring a song back to life?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm doing that currently, actually, going back through the catalogs and seeing if I can re-demo some stuff and give it kind of new life, especially the groove and the tempo. I find
right.
You can change ballads to up-tempos and vice versa. It's just a matter of, what works best, and maybe an up-tempo song is what you're looking for to pitch to another artist, even though it was a ballad on you, and there's all kinds of things you can do with it. I don't think a song's ever... If it's a good song, I don't think it's ever truly done. It can definitely be worked on and made into something different. That's the first time I've done it personally on a record, though. That one, I can't play the original version, but you'd be shocked as to how different that is from what it started out as.
It's interesting. I interviewed Dan Hill recently, and of course, Sometimes When We Touch is a huge hit. And on his latest CD, he includes the original version he did, which the lyrics are pretty much the same, but the main thing is it's a different melody. So it's kind of weird to hear a song that you know to a different melody. And of course, that can make or break a song.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't changed as much melody-wise. I basically kept the same order of notes on Heart Like a Stone.
Yeah.
It was more just working it into kind of a bluegrassy up-tempo single instead of something that Brian Adams would have cut. Basically,
right.
That's how it started out. So.
Now, on the subject of songwriting, can you talk about, maybe let's go back a bit in time, and when you wrote those first couple of songs and you started to get into songwriting, what was it like as you started out? Was it an easy process for you, or was there stuff you had to learn?
Definitely learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from Don, which we had talked about earlier. I learned a lot from Mac McAnally, who was the first guy I ever wrote with, and I don't think many people can say that. He was the very first. I had a handful of songs when I moved to Nashville, probably 15 or 20 that I had written on my own. But the very first songwriting session they set me up with was Mac, and I started to learn right from day one and learn how to center a song. In country music, I feel like it's important to keep the story centered. I think the chorus is the center part of the song, and then the verses should always be building back towards that. And I learned
right.
how to do that, I think. And just from every writer I've written with over the years, you pick up things, though. I that's probably out of all my Nashville experience, that's the thing that was the most important, was learning how to create music. The studios were great. It was great to do some of the shows and be on some of the shows with the other artists that I was on. But I think the songwriting is the long-term lesson that I learned there and took with me.
And what can you describe the moments when you're on stage sharing a new song, maybe even just in an intimate type of setting with your guitar, but you're sharing song for the first time with a crowd. What's that like? Is there a bit of nervousness? You know, will they like this song? And then when you start to see them responding, what's that like?
There is a bit of nervousness. You know, they're kind of like your little babies, if you will, all of the songs that you write, and you worry about if people are going to get it the way you hope that they get it. And I tend to do that, though. I tend to take them out pretty early on after I've written them, like within a month or two, and try them out at a show. And I do an acoustic, even on the shows where we do a full band set, I usually do three or four songs acoustic in the middle, and usually one of those is something that is brand new, or maybe the fourth or fifth time I played it or something like that. And there hasn't been any real disappointments. I got to say, most of the time that I think one is commercial and I think people will sing along with it and like it, it's kind of turned out that way. You know, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think I do have a sense of what people will want to sing along to, and I think that's a big part of country music is having songs with choruses that people remember. And looking forward to see how this new batch that I get to this winter kind of turns out when we go out and do shows in the spring.
Now, do you have songs that songs of yours that you perform that you've had people come up to you afterwards and say that the song has a special meaning to them? Some of the more meaningful songs that it got them through a rough time, or they could relate to, you know, what you were singing about?
We're getting that a lot with "Leaving's Not an Option." We're getting that a lot because it's kind of an honest love song. You know, it's talking about the disagreements that people have in relationships, and that, you know, not to throw it away over one big fight or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of married people are giving us responses that it's something important to them on the new one. Somewhere Inside was a song like that for me off the first album way back. I used to get people saying they were playing that at, I hate to say it, but at funerals and stuff like that. And it seemed to be one that kind of touched a lot of people. And then you get the opposite end of that, where songs like, I had a song called "Pamela Anderson Is in My Bedroom," and people really reacted to that one. You know, they came up and said they're, even though they weren't country fans, they were drugged to the show. That song made them a fan, and so you just never know. You just never know. But recently, we've been getting more comments about "Leaving's Not an Option" meaning something to people than I've gotten in several years. It's seems to be a single that's touching a chord with people for sure.
That's great. And as you said a moment ago with the song about Pamela Anderson, songs that, you know, that you can perform that get people into country music that might not have otherwise listened. That's a pretty cool experience when they say that they weren't always a country fan, but they sort of got into it because of your music.
That is a really cool comment. That's great to hear. Betty was a song like that, too. When Betty came out, we had people buying the record that said they had never bought a country record before, but they just loved Betty. And that's cool. You know, I mean, I consider myself pretty much a traditional country artist, but I like to take chances every now and then with songs and see if I can get outside the box a little bit and you know, kind of push the envelope a little bit. Anyway,
yep.
That's what I've tried to do over the years. Anyway, I think if anybody goes to the website and look at my singles list over the years, they'll see a few that kind of stand out as strange songs.
Well, you've got a great one. I'm not sure whether this one is strange or not, but "Dixie Bodorant," which is such a cool song. It's a sing-along type of song. It's a fun song. And now I think I recall the story. The writer on that is a writer associated with Georgia Satellites, or "Keep Your Hands to Yourself."
He was the lead singer of the Georgia Satellites,
a
guy named Dan Baird, who I think he's got my, you know, on my all-time top five albums list. His solo album is called "Love Songs for the Hearing Impaired." And I think it's just classic, and "Dixie" comes off that record. And it's the only single of my career that I did not write. And if I was going to cut a cover song, I wanted to do something that I didn't want to take on a big song. Like, I didn't want to take on a song that people had known and associated with another artist. And "Dixie" was an album cut. It was the 10th song on Dan's solo album. I think the only hit he ever had what's called I Love You Period. I don't know if you remember that song or not, but it got into the
title
top 30.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, it got into the top 30 on rock radio back in the early 90s. And so that was the only hit he had as a solo artist. So I thought it was a cool cover song because a lot of people think that's my song. You know, they haven't heard the Dan Gray version. And so at least I get to own it a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like the type of song you would write, I mean, the type of lyrics in it. It's a funny song.
It's a funny song, you know, it's really funny, and he's got a lot of funny songs. People should go check out Dan Baird. Go to your iTunes tonight and check out Dan Baird. You will not be disappointed if you like straight-up rock and roll, three-chord rock and roll, man, that's the thing. Most of his albums don't even have a ballad on them. It's just ten rockin' songs.
Now, how do you spell the last name, Dan Baird?
B-A-I-R-D.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, yeah,
so, yeah
you should check him out. Another song along the way of yours, I love this one. The video was cool, too, the hockey theme going on. But the song itself is great, The Kind of Heart That Breaks.
Yeah, that was my second number one. That was back in 98 or 99. I can't remember which year that actually charted. But, yeah, the hockey video made that much more recurrent. I don't think if we had a shot any other video that it would have been played for as long or as much as that one was. We got to it first. You know, we're in Canada, and I thought, why hasn't somebody shot a hockey video? And so it just didn't make sense to me. So I wanted to have the Hanson brothers in it. That's the only thing that was missing.
Yeah, that would have made it the perfect Canadian video.
The perfect Canadian video, for sure. And
I
think
Hanson brothers.
It'd still be on twice a day if we had got the Hansons.
now, a cool part of that, too, I remember the female goalie.
Well, I was the goalie. You mean the female hockey
player? You were the goalie. She was the player.
Yeah. She was an alternate for, I can't remember if it was the Canadian Women Juniors team or if it was actually the Olympics or something like that that were coming up, but she was an alternate on some big team. And a Russian girl that, well, she was Canadian, but she was from a Russian background.
Right.
I think her name was like Oksana or something like that. And
she
could really play, man. And I repeatedly told her, because they had not gone to the trouble of, I figured we would have practice pucks, like the sponge pucks, you know?
Right.
Because I was getting in and out of wardrobe, and they didn't really have that much hockey gear for me. It was just the pads and the blocker and glove and helmet, and I didn't have a cup on. So she kept going five hole with real pucks, and I was pretty concerned for a couple of hours there that I was not going to be leaving the same man that I came in.
A little higher range in the voice.
Yeah, for sure. So I was lucky on that one that we didn't have an accident.
It's not all glamorous, as we learned before, and this is potential injuries. What I also loved about the song was the chorus, I guess the overall hook, The Kind of Heart That Breaks, Easy Does It, and so you almost think it's the girl with the heart that breaks, and then it ends with The Kind of Heart That Breaks, My Heart. Cool twist.
Yeah, it's got a nice little twist for sure, and one of those sing-along songs you're talking about, you know, people hear the chorus a couple of times and they know it, and wrote that with a guy named Kim Tribble, who and I think he wrote several of George Fox's singles. And
yeah, that's right.
He had a couple of hits on Colin Ray, too, in the States, and Mindy McCready, too. Guys do it all the time.
Yeah.
So, he had several hits, too. He's a good guy to write with.
Do you have any funny fan encounter stories?
Oh, a lot of them. You know, there's been some really strange ones over the years that one of the earliest ones that I always used to tell the story on was a girl coming up in an autograph line at Calgary. I think we were at the Stampede, and we were doing the autograph line, and we were selling T-shirts at the time that said Chris Cummings or whatever, and she, I turned around, and like I had taken her album to sign or whatever, and I turned around for a minute, and I turned back around, and she had undressed. She had taken off her taken off her shirt, that the Chris Cummings T-shirt, and she said she didn't want that shirt. She wanted the shirt I was actually wearing, and she wasn't leaving until she got it. So that was a pretty odd one, especially early on.
That,
I wasn't we didn't have any security or anything like that. I think I had like two singles out, and so there was no security people around. And basically,
right.
I just took the T-shirt that I had and gave it to her because there was no other way to diffuse the situation, if you will.
Right.
So, yeah, there's been some odd ones over the years, and you know, it's you never know how people are going to react. I find that playing festivals, there's less of that, and playing theaters, there's less of that. But you start playing bars and casinos, and you just don't know what's going to happen. I think alcohol might be a factor.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely alcohol will do that to people. Let's return. We got some remaining moments here. We got definitely time to play Leaving's Not an Option and then a few more things to talk about when we come back. So that's the current single now, doing really well. I've heard it on different stations. And how do you feel about the success, and can you share a bit about the writing on it?
Really feeling good about how it's doing. You know, to be on in 80 markets in Canada is really nice to be back. And like I said, I think we're at 24 this week on the charts, which is really nice. The writing of it, I got to give Dawn a lot of credit for this song. You know, out of the bunch of songs we wrote, there were a bunch of songs that were my idea, and I had, you know, a big part in coming in with it kind of halfway done. But this song was one that you can hear the maturity in it, and I think a lot of the lines come from living a little bit more than I had lived at the time. I think I was 28 when we wrote this song, and I definitely got a lot of lines in it. I'm not saying I didn't write a lot of it, but as far as the idea and the overall maturity and theme of it, I have to give a lot of credit to Don Schlitz. And, yeah, just really happy that, like I said, that a traditional country song has managed to find its way up the charts again, because a lot of stuff you hear on... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that is a great thing.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I mean, the next single we're going to put out is the title track off the record. It's definitely more pop rock oriented, and it's actually, to me, more built for what's going on at country radio these days. I kind of have more confidence in getting a good chart position out of Give Me Tonight, and this one was kind of a risk to come with something. You hate to say it, but it's almost too country for country radio.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And so... I'm really happy that this one has made it up the charts as far as it has, and I'm thankful to the stations that gave it a chance and gave their listeners a chance to hear it.
That's great, and we'll encourage our listeners listening to this now to call your local country station and request the song as well. That makes a big difference, and
it makes a big difference. People don't realize
yeah.
how much of a difference that makes. You know, when they hear those shows, you know, like Play It or Plow It, or you know, where
right.
The call-in shows, they think that hundreds of calls are coming in, and the truth is it's probably less than 50 calls making the decision on that night. So if you pick up the phone, you're really making a difference.
Yeah, that's a very good point for sure. Here it is now, Chris Cummings, his latest radio single, a great song called Leaving's Not an Option, here on In the Country.
Down, drag out, last all night. We can break a lamp and slam the door. We can scream and we can swear that you can go, you know where. Leaving's not an option anymore. We can both stare straight ahead. Time to stay. Flip a coin.
current radio single from Chris Cummings, getting lots of airplay. It's called Leaving's Not an Option. It's from the CD, Give Me Tonight. That's his latest CD, his sixth, as a matter of fact. And you can order it off of iTunes. You can also head to chriscummings.ca to learn more about him and order the CD. I've got just a few moments left, Chris. I wanted to ask you if you had a dream duet partner, somebody you would put at the top of your list to record a song with.
Wow, who would I put at the top of the list? You know, I mentioned earlier in the interview, but Alison Krauss is probably would be my top dream choice of somebody
nice.
To do a song with. I just think she's wicked. I think she's got the best voice, female voice in the last 15, 20 years. And after having Amanda sing on these last two singles, Amanda Wilkinson, somebody's really impressed me in Canada. I think she's great, and who knows, maybe one of these days I'll write something and see if she wants to come in the studio and do one.
Terrific. Great choice. Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I've been a fan for a long time, and great to share the music and, of course, the songs from the new CD, Give Me Tonight. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been really enjoyable for me, too. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Good. Really enjoyed it, and again, we'll encourage our listeners to pick up the CD and head over to chriscummings.ca and, of course, request Leaving's Not an Option at your local country station. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country. Leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone.